Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to part two, episode two of our series of Henry VIII's Wives. So we discussed Catherine of Aragon last time, and we discussed that at a certain point in their marriage, there was an invader into their home, and I mean literally into their home, and it was the woman we are talking about in this podcast. Probably the most famous of all of Henry's wives. And was she the worst done by? I mean, we covered that a little bit on the last episode. But the young Anne Boleyn, who moved in with King Henry whilst he was still married, and changed the course of English history. So, Henry's second wife, Anne Boleyn. Who was she? What do we know about her? And why is she so famous? Anne Boleyn, born in 1500, died in 1536, is one of the most intriguing figures in British history. Her love match with Henry VIII and her subsequent execution at the Tower of London after only 3 years of marriage have inspired dozens of books and films. Was she a ruthless schemer, or was her death simply a tragic consequence of British and English court politics? The closest we can get now to Anne Boleyn today is visiting her final resting place, where she is buried in the Chapel Royal of St. Peter at the Tower of London. Anne Boleyn was born in either 1500 or 1501, and we don't know exactly when. Her father, Sir Thomas Boleyn, was a well-respected courtier, and her mother, Elizabeth Howard, was the daughter of Sir Thomas Howard, the second Duke of Norfolk, one of the most powerful men in the country. She spent her childhood at Hever Castle in Kent, and in 1513, Thomas Boleyn sent Anne to the court of Margaret of Austria and then to the French court, originally as a companion to Henry VIII's sister Mary, who was married to Louis XII. After Louis's death in 1515, Anne stayed in France for 7 years in the household of Queen Claude, wife of the new king, Francis I. For an ambitious family like the Boleyns, this was a wonderful opportunity for their daughter to learn all the skills and manners expected of a lady at court, and to form a close connection with the French and English royal families. Her French education made Anne a standout on her return to England. She could sing, play musical instruments and dance, and introduced new French court fashions to the English court. She returned to England in 1522 to find that her sister Mary, who was married by the way, had become Henry's mistress and possibly remained his mistress until 1525. Both Mary and Anne became ladies-in-waiting to Henry's first wife, Catherine of Aragon. Henry VIII may have first encountered Anne Boleyn in March 1522 at Thomas Wolsey's Whitehall Palace. Anne was not short of admirers. Henry Percy, and later the Earl, who became the Earl of Northumberland, and the poet Thomas Wyatt both courted her. These seem to have remained within the accepted boundaries of flirtation and what was known as romantic poetry. So, essentially, just flirting, nothing more than that. In 1526, the king's interest in Anne significantly upped the stakes. Henry VIII's long marriage to Catherine of Aragon had produced only one surviving child, the Princess Mary. Henry was becoming increasingly desperate for a legitimate son and heir to secure the future of the Tudor dynasty. Either driven by her virtue or ambition, or by her scheming relatives, and aware of the king's dilemma, Anne refused to become a royal mistress and held out for the possibility of marriage. Anne actually received quite a few letters, love letters, from Henry VIII, and in the Vatican Library, a series of 17 letters survive to this day, which details Henry's growing infatuation with Anne over the next couple of years. One awkwardly and explicitly declared that the king's heart belonged to Anne alone, and that he hoped his body would soon also. It was signed with a love heart around Anne's initials, and we don't know what Anne responded, unfortunately, because her letters did not survive. But in 1528, Anne was struck with what was known as the sweating sickness, a mysterious and often fatal virus. Henry sent his doctors to tend to her at Hever Castle, to which obviously now we know she survived. In the Tudor period, not even a king could simply just get a divorce. If Catherine of Aragon had meekly accepted her fate, then the English history we know may have turned out rather differently. But Catherine was a proud and pious queen who believed that her marriage to Henry VIII was sacred. And in 1527, the king began to look for a political and legal solution, petitioning Pope Clement VII and claiming that his marriage had never been legitimate because he had sinned in taking his brother's widow, which some scholars believed would have been prohibited in the Bible. Thomas Wolsey was charged with procuring the divorce, and to this he failed. His own career was destroyed in the process as the Pope refused to give Henry the demands. It was Anne who may have suggested the solution to the Pope's refusal to grant Henry a divorce. Driven by perhaps her own reformist faith, she gave Henry a copy of William Tyndale's Obedience of a Christian Man. This book argued that the supreme authority was not held by the Pope, but by the words of God enshrined in the Bible. Henry defied the Pope and dismissed Catherine from court in 1531. And this left Henry open to a new relationship. Anne Boleyn married Henry in January 1533, 7 years after their courtship had begun. So Henry was really infatuated because, as I'm sure many of the men listening to this know, 7 years, you don't really hang around for a woman for that long. But Henry did. Henry's marriage to Anne was technically a bigamous relationship, as his marriage to Catherine wasn't annulled until May 1533. So those first few months of his marriage, technically, to the letter of the law, wasn't allowed, but he's the King of England and head of the new Church of England. No one's going to argue with him. In May 1533, Anne was escorted by river to the Tower of London, where she prepared for her coronation in the royal apartments. She then travelled to Westminster in a triumphant procession, and Anne was crowned Queen in Westminster Abbey on the 1st of June 1533, when she was actually 6 months pregnant. Henry and Anne's first child was born on September the 7th, 1533, and it was a healthy daughter who would grow up to become Elizabeth I. The following year, Henry broke with the Roman Catholic Church, setting himself up as the supreme head of what he would call the Church of England, and that's what it later became. This created shockwaves which caused religious and political unrest in Britain for the next 200 years, and to an extent, even today. Even today we still have that Church of England Catholic divide. Unsurprisingly, Anne supported Henry's new religious, political and political policies, gathering around them a new team of rising courtiers, including Thomas Cromwell and Thomas Cranmer. Anne seems to have been active in promoting new educational identities for monasteries, no longer under the protection of the Catholic Church. She was also the first royal patron of the great court artist Hans Holbein, who designed an arch for her coronation and a rose water fountain. After the birth of Princess Elizabeth, Anne and Henry had no more children. Miscarriages in 1534 and 1536 may have led to Henry always being superstitious about what was going on. To question, as well, whether he'd even made the right choice in marrying Anne. Henry and Anne's relationship was built on passion and expectation, which seems to have become more problematic as the years went on, to the point that Henry actually began to look outside of his marriage for solutions. A promising new foreign alliance with the Holy Roman Emperor floundered because the Emperor, Charles V, refused to ratify Henry's.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Marriage to Anne. Hostile factions gathered in the wings, led by all of those courtiers who had lost their influence due to the change and the Boleyn regime coming into court. Anne also fell out with her ally Thomas Cromwell, who had arranged for the proceeds from the sale of the monasteries and the property in the monasteries to go to the royal coffers, or what we'd know as Henry's pocket, rather than be made available for charitable purposes, which is what Anne actually kind of wanted in the first place. In 1536, Cromwell made a decisive move against Anne. Accusations of adultery and even of plotting against the king's life were levelled against the queen, her brother, and a small group of courtiers. Anne was arrested on the 2nd of May, 1536, and taken by barge to the Tower of London, arriving at the private postern gate, which is now known as the Bywood Tower. Henry VIII was notoriously prone to suspicion and now besotted with one of Anne's own ladies-in-waiting, Jane Seymour. Ignored the Queen's declare of innocence, and a sham trial filled with Anne's enemies found her guilty. She found herself a prisoner at the Tower of London in the same royal apartment where just 3 years before she had awaited her coronation. Now, was Anne Boleyn guilty of her crimes? Or was she a tragic victim of court policy? We don't really know. There are stories that say she was a bit promiscuous and there was evidence of it. Another theory that goes back through history was that she had an extra finger and therefore Henry declared her a witch. Whatever the real reasons, whether she did do it or whether she didn't do it, it didn't really matter. Because if she did do it, she was found guilty. If she didn't do it, she was going to be found guilty. It didn't matter. Her die had already been cast. On the eve of her execution, according to the Constable of the Tower, Anne joked, "I heard say the executioner was very good, and I have a little neck," before putting her hands around it and laughing. Now, I don't know whether that's true or whether it was a nervous thing, but she almost seemed she knew her fate. Now, Henry actually granted her a bit of a mercy when it comes to the killings. The execution in the Tower of London was predominantly an axe, an executioner's axe. She was actually given the option, which she took, of dying at the hands of a skilled swordsman, and she was to be executed by sword. Now, there were horrific stories in the Tower of London of executions done by axe, where on occasions it would take 3, 4, I think up to 15 attempts to remove the head by axe. And there's also been documented cases where the axeman has actually missed, hit the arm, taken the arm off, or chopped the top of the head off because he's not hit the neck cleanly. Kind of brutal way of dying if it's not a clean shot. Whereas with the swordsman, they were a lot more accurate. And yeah, in this particular instance, she was beheaded and very skillfully it was done in one hit. So a bit of mercy, if you want to call it mercy, but the execution of a queen for treason was an unprecedented event. It had never happened, and Henry and Cromwell ensured that it was carefully staged and managed within the walls of the tower, rather than a public execution on the streets outside. It wasn't a private execution. There was still a substantial crowd of courtiers, the tower officials, and people who lived within the Tower of London were obviously still there. But it was a lot less public than a normal execution. On the 19th of May, 1536, Anne was beheaded on Tower Green. She protested her innocence until the last, and her final words were controversial. She put, "I am come hither to die, for according to the law and by the law, I am judged to die, and therefore I will speak nothing against it. I pray God save the king, for a gentler nor a more merciful prince was there never." Some may feel her words were probably laced with bitter irony, but Anne was probably considering the safety of her infant daughter Elizabeth. She was buried at the Chapel of St. Peter in the Tower, and Henry married Jane Seymour a mere 11 days after Anne's execution. Anne Boleyn was around 35 years old when she died. Historians generally agree she was born in 1501, which would make her in the mid-30s when she was executed in 1536. though relatively brief, Anne's tumultuous life significantly influenced the religious and political landscapes of Tudor England, and her only daughter would become arguably the most famous queen in British history. After Anne's death, her brother George Boleyn, Lord Rochford, had already been executed for his alleged involvement in Anne's treasonable plot. Their father, Thomas, lost his position as Lord Privy Seal and died a few short years later. Anne's sister Mary lived on in relative obscurity until 1543, and Anne's sister, Jane Boleyn, Lady Rochford, was executed for her involvement in the alleged adultery of Catherine Howard, Henry's fifth wife. Anne was effectively written out of the history books for the rest of Henry VIII's reign. Her name was literally chiselled out of the fabric of Hampton Court, her badges and heraldry replaced by those of Jane Seymour. At least one reminder of Anne remains at the palace in the Great Hall. Catherine of Aragon's daughter, Mary I, promoted the view of Anne as a heretical seductress who had destroyed her mother and corrupted her father away from the true religion of Catholicism. That's what happened during Mary's reign. However, during Elizabeth's reign, Anne's reputation was partly rehabilitated. A set of portraits reveal a slender-necked young woman with dark, expressive eyes, and these portraits may or may not have been based on lost original likenesses. At the same time, Anne's credentials as a pious religious reformer were celebrated, but the question of her moral character was left unchallenged. After all, Elizabeth I was the daughter of both Anne and Henry. Throughout her reign and since, Anne's character's actions have been debated by historians. Also, her appearance has been debated because a lot of the portraits of her at the time were destroyed. The portraits we see of Anne Boleyn now were painted after her death. Her opponents describe her as morally corrupt and physically deformed. Later descriptions venomously gave her a sixth finger and a large cyst under her chin. Anne's supporters, however, have celebrated the tragic Anne of a Thousand Days, the innocent victim of the court faction of Henry VIII. In reality, we don't know. There's not a lot that we know about Anne Boleyn because Henry got it all removed. He moved on, he got her executed, and he was trying to write her out of the history books. And I believe he would have succeeded had his son Edward's to his next wife, Jane Seymour, had more children and followed the Tudor line. Because the only reason we know about Anne Boleyn, other than her execution, is thanks to her daughter Elizabeth. If it wasn't for Elizabeth I, the name Anne Boleyn would just be another page in a history book. So, was Anne Boleyn a real seductress, a real temptress who caused all these issues? Or was she just outdone by another woman again? Henry VIII has this problem where he gets bored of one woman and moves on to another. So, were the accusations of her true? Or was she just another victim to Henry VIII's brutal oppression of women during his reign? We will never know, unfortunately, because we don't have a time machine and we don't know. But it's one of those great age-old questions when we're looking at the wives of Henry VIII. So, let me know what you think. Who, so far, we're two episodes in, who's worse off, Catherine of Aragon or Anne Boleyn? I mean, on one side, Catherine of Aragon, definitely technically worsely treated, but she did keep her head. Anne Boleyn didn't. So, I will leave that as a discussion for you guys. Let me know what you thought of this episode. Next time, we are moving on to his third wife. Probably, if I'm honest with you, probably his favourite wife, Jane Seymour. Thanks for listening.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.